Some of the greatest names from the past half century of popular music are virtually unknown to legions of fans of Aretha Franklin or Ray Charles or Otis Redding. Tom Dowd was one of those little-known giants. A recording engineer at Atlantic Records, Tom Dowd possessed the mind of a rocket scientist and the ears of a musician. When he died in October 2002 at the age of 77, Dowd left behind a legacy of recordings that trace the recent history of American popular music and the evolution of modern technology. If you listen to the discography of Atlantic Records from John Coltrane through Eric Clapton, you are hearing Tom Dowd. This weekend, the documentary film Tom Dowd, The Language of Music, opens in select theaters around the country. Later this month, a DVD with bonus features will be released, and the film's director is Mark Moorman. He's in our New York bureau. Welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
What was it that drew you to Tom Dowd?
Well, I met the man in the recording studio at Criteria Studios in Miami, and right away you knew you were in the presence of someone very special. A couple of days after I met him, I was handed his autobiographical manuscript, and I read it and was just floored. I just couldn't believe that one person could have been a participant in the making of so much history, and yet no one outside of the music business knew who he was.
Music has been very kind to me over the years, and I realize that I have acquired a pile of information through the experiences I've had with the various artists that I've worked with, from Charlie Parker, Lester Young, Dizzy Gillespie, through Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles, Bobby Darin, Rod Stewart, The Drifters, The Coasters, Lynyrd Skynyrd, the Allman Brothers Band.
Given who he was Tom Dowd simply at the right place, at the right time, with the right talent? I mean, he was a musician, he played tuba and string bass, he led bands in college, and he also studied physics, and the recording industry was taking off.
Well, he was a pioneer. He was, you could say, in the right place at the right time, but Tom, as happens in life, you sort of make your own luck. And up till then, they basically were using old radio equipment and using one microphone in the middle of the room and moving the musicians back and forth. And Tom started miking each instrument and mixing on the fly, really created a pioneering sound.
He moved from the use of consoles, audio boards that, you know, were just from radio stations that they'd stick in a recording studio, to actually designing and building his own, which changed the sound of music.
That's when he invented the faders that are on the soundboard that everyone's so familiar with. Before that, it was these big, unwieldy, round knobs, and Tom put faders in and really revolutionized sound recording.
Why did he and the Erdogan brothers, Ahmet and Neswi, who formed the Atlantic label, and they made jazz, soul, rhythm and blues, street corner, and southern rock and roll records, why did he and the brothers hit it off so well? Why did that partnership click?
Ahmet Erdogan tells the story in the film about meeting Tom for the first time. He went into the recording studio expecting to record with the professor. And the professor was this German gentleman with a monocle in his eye and the lab coat. And they said, well, no, you're going to have Tommy Dowd.
I said, Tommy Dowd? Who's Tommy Dowd? I said, I mean, this kid looks like he's just in high school. So he says, well, no, he's a good engineer. Don't worry, he'll be good. So I said, oh, I mean, we stuck with this. So I was starting to criticize everything he was doing. I said, the mics aren't right. I said, oh, we'll take everyone. And he was running around. Blah, blah. And I said, I want more drums. And he brings up the drums. Blah, boom, boom, boom. I said, oh, that's good, you know. And Herb Abramson, who was my first partner, says, man, I think we got something. This kid knows what he's doing. And thereafter, Tommy Dowd engineered every recording we ever made.
What was Tom Dowd's contribution to Ray Charles's legacy?
At first, he was trying to sound like Nat King Cole, and he knew that in the end, I think he says that his mother told him, you know, you just got to be you, and that's what Ray Charles, one of a kind.
So we bought the Ray Charles contract for $3,000.
And the one or two sides that we purchased of his were in the articulate Nat King Cole perfect enunciation style.
I started being myself instead of imitating Nat Cole, which is what I was making my living doing, working around finding little gigs, you know, to survive.
The backside of one of those records was some honking blues type thing, and Atlantic said, man, that, let's get him to do more like that.
I told myself one morning, hey, man, you got to be yourself like your mama told you. You got to sound like what you are.
When Tom Dowd was studying at Columbia University, he worked on in a lab up there in part of what became the Manhattan Project. And he was actually a witness to the atomic tests on Bikini Atoll. What was he like when he talked about that?
One of the days that I remember most fondly was coming to New York City with a crew, and we took him to Columbia University. And he was very much alive that day, just remembering 50 years before of being a kid in the labs of Columbia, working with Rainwater and Fermi and Dunning, smashing atoms on a cyclotron. And he didn't really know what he was part of at the time until the bomb dropped on Hiroshima. And then they went to Bikini Atoll and witnessed the atomic bomb explosions. And I know that had a major effect on him, just his psyche, to see that the power created through physics.
And that bomb went off underneath
the lagoon.
A wall of water came up, and it didn't get higher and higher. It got wider and wider and wider. But we're looking at it, and it's going laterally. It was going this way, too. It was getting close. It scared me to death. It was frightening. It was devastating.
And he came back to Columbia expecting to be a nuclear physicist, but they wouldn't give him college credit for his work because it was all top secret. So he's going to be going back to school learning 1939 physics when he was part of developing 1950s physics, and he just didn't have the patience for that, and got a summer job at a demo recording studio in New York City. The next thing he knew, he was recording Dizzy Gillespie and Charlie Parker and Lester Young. The thing that, as a filmmaker, when I read that he had worked on the Manhattan Project and witnessed these atomic bomb explosions, I must admit, I was like, well, hey, we can put an atomic bomb at the beginning of the movie with a Cream song. And I just, how could you possibly connect these two things, you know, an atom bomb explosion and Tales of Brave Ulysses by Cream?
You thought the leaden winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
It was fascinating to me that he had this history with science and physics before he ever got into music, but then he took what he had learned through all this physics into the studio and really revolutionized the recording process.
With tales of brave Ulysses, how his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing for the spot.
The Layla Sessions and a serendipitous encounter between Eric Clapton and Duane Allman. That's a terrific story. And the fact that these master tapes still exist and Tom Dowd could pull up just the two dueling guitar parts so we could hear how that tune was constructed.
One day I walked into Tom's apartment in Miami and I said, hey, Tom, I got this idea of, I didn't even know how quite to ask, but I was like, you know, I kind of want to put Layla on the soundboard. And Tom picks up the phone, he calls somebody somewhere, and he's like, hey, you know, I need to get the submasters of Layla, can you send them? And he hangs up the phone, he says, they'll be here Friday. So, okay, Tom.
That's Duane that we hear on the left. And if I pull Duane down a little bit, now you're going to hear the duet, Duane and Eric playing the melody on the right. And here they are all together. And it's just beautiful.
It was kind of capturing the magic like Tom did in these recording sessions. That's kind of what we did that day with Tom revisiting that song for the first time in 30 years. And you see Tom, he's hearing the music. He's hearing it and he's thinking about every track and how he had done it 30 years before. And you see him bringing it up track by track by track. And it really is a beautiful moment in the film.
Technique and touch. And here comes the piano part. And from here on in, we have to start a new mix because this was recorded almost 3 weeks after the part you just heard went by.
did one of the last scenes in the film happen? Tom Dowd is in his apartment. He's sitting at the piano, and he begins to quote Irving Berlin.
It was probably the last interview we did with him, was in his apartment. And there was a piano in the apartment. I had him recite the lyrics to that song because he had just played it on the piano.
I love a piano. I love a piano. I love to hear somebody play upon a piano, a grand piano. It simply carries me away. I know a fine way to treat a Steinway. I love to run my fingers over the keys, the ivories. And with a pedal, I love to meddle. It helps me drive my blues away. I'm so excited when I'm invited to hear some long-haired genius play. So you can keep your fiddle and keep your bow. Give me a piano. I want a stomp right beside an upright or a high-toned baby grand. The words to I Love a Piano.
As he said, this everything I do in music is related to the lyrics of this song. Really a beautiful moment, and I think it really captured the essence of who Tom Dowd was.
The documentary film Tom Dowd and the Language of Music is playing in theaters now and will be released on DVD later this month. The director is Mark Moorman. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.
I'm so delighted if I'm invited to hear that long-haired...